A specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. With these ominous words, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels launched a slim pamphlet in 1848 that would become one of history's most influential political documents. Written as revolutionary fervor swept across Europe, the Communist Manifesto offered not just a critique of industrial capitalism, but a radical vision for transforming society. While barely 12,000 words long, its impact has been immeasurable, shaping labor movements, inspiring revolutions, and influencing political thought across the ideological spectrum. Whether you view it as dangerous radicalism or visionary analysis, the manifesto's core insights about class struggle, economic inequality, and capitalism's inherent contradictions continue to resonate in our world of billionaires and precarious workers. Its language has permeated our culture, from Workers of the World Unite to the concept of class consciousness, making it impossible to understand modern politics without grappling with its arguments. The history of all hitherto existing society is the history of class struggles. This declaration frames the manifesto's core premise: human history as ongoing conflict between oppressor and oppressed. From Rome's patricians and plebeians to medieval lords and serfs, society has always featured economic exploitation and resistance. Under capitalism, these relations have simplified into two main camps: bourgeoisie, owners of production means, and proletariat, workers selling labor. Capitalism's distinctiveness lies in its revolutionary character. The bourgeoisie, rising from feudalism, has created unprecedented productive forces, accomplishing wonders far surpassing Egyptian pyramids, Roman aqueducts, and Gothic cathedrals. They've transformed villages into metropolises and established global trade networks. Yet the system contains contradictions, manifesting in economic crises when goods remain unsold while workers starve. These crises are temporarily resolved through destroying productive capacity, finding new markets, or intensifying exploitation, merely postponing larger collapses. The proletariat evolves gradually. Initially directing anger at machines or individual bosses, workers form unions and political organizations as industry concentrates them in cities. The bourgeoisie unwittingly aids this process by drawing workers into political struggles and providing education. Eventually, workers recognize their common interests against capital, transcending national differences. "You are horrified at our intention to abolish private property," Marx writes. "Precisely so. That is just what we intend." He clarifies that communists target bourgeois property, capital, that exploits wage labor, not personal possessions. Under capitalism, property functions as power over others' labor, extracting value while workers receive subsistence wages. When critics claim abolishing property would end productivity, Marx counters that capitalism already reduces workers to machine appendages, while owners contribute nothing productive. He argues the bourgeois family centers on capital, while economic pressures tear proletarian families apart. He reverses accusations about community of women, noting bourgeois marriage already treats women as property. The communist revolution aims to elevate the proletariat to ruling class and centralize production. Marx outlines transitional measures, including progressive taxation, bank nationalization, and free education. The ultimate vision transcends the state. Once class distinctions disappear, public power loses its political character, creating an association where the free development of each is the condition for the free development of all. Marx and Engels distinguish their scientific socialism from competing socialist tendencies they consider inadequate: reactionary socialism, aristocrats backing workers against the bourgeoisie; petty bourgeois socialism, small business owners facing extinction; and conservative socialism, bourgeois reformers addressing capitalism's problems to preserve the system. Their critique of critical utopian socialism, Owen and Fourier, is most significant. These early socialists recognized class antagonisms but emerged before industrial workers had fully developed as a class. Without conditions for proletarian emancipation, they created ideal communities through moral example rather than class struggle. Marx acknowledges their valuable critique of capitalism, but argues they substituted personal invention for historical action. This distinction remains crucial. Marx wasn't proposing a perfect society designed by intellectuals, but analyzing how capitalism's contradictions create conditions for its transformation. Revolution would emerge through workers recognizing their collective power, not through moral persuasion, marking the boundary between utopian and scientific socialism. The manifesto concludes with revolutionary strategy, showing sophisticated understanding of local conditions. Communists represent the proletariat across national boundaries, advancing working-class interests while fighting for both immediate aims and the movement's future. This strategic flexibility adapts to context. In France, communists ally with social democrats. In Switzerland, they support radicals. In Poland, they back agrarian revolution for national liberation. And in Germany, they fight alongside the bourgeoisie against monarchy, while instilling class consciousness in workers. The manifesto's final rallying cry, "The proletarians have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Working men of all countries, unite," remains one of political literature's most stirring calls to action. This internationalist perspective challenged nationalist divisions that kept workers fighting each other rather than their common oppressors. Marx understood that capital operated globally and required coordinated global resistance. He identified how ruling classes exploited national differences through xenophobia, competing labor markets, and colonial exploitation, opposing both reactionary nationalism and bourgeois cosmopolitanism that maintained exploitation while facilitating global markets. The manifesto's significance connects directly to the Soviet experiment, though many contend this implementation strayed from Marx's vision. Marx believed eliminating private ownership would end poverty, but the Soviet Union substituted state control rather than genuine collective ownership. This created a new elite of party officials who controlled resources and decisions. Workers remained alienated from meaningful control over their labor, contradicting Marx's vision of worker emancipation. The Cold War essentially pitted private against state ownership, two variants of capitalism, with the bourgeois version proving stronger. Nevertheless, the Soviet system provided benefits many admired: guaranteed employment, free education and health care, pensions, and affordable housing. Literacy rose from 37% to nearly 100% within a generation. Post-World War II, Soviet economic growth reinforced faith in the system. The Soviet experience raises crucial questions. Can state power implement emancipatory change without reproducing domination? Can centralized planning replace markets without creating new hierarchies? These challenges remain unresolved for revolutionary politics today. Nearly 175 years later, the Communist Manifesto remains relevant because of capitalism's persistent contradictions that Marx identified with remarkable foresight. His description of capitalism as a revolutionary force that constantly revolutionizes the instruments of production perfectly captures our era of disruptive technology. His analysis of globalization and prediction of economic crises proved prophetic, as shown by the 2008 financial collapse. Marx's insight that capitalism creates immense wealth alongside poverty remains significant. Today's inequality, with 8 men owning as much wealth as half of humanity, confirms this observation. His recognition that capitalism commodifies everything, leaving no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest, speaks directly to our hyper-commercialized culture, where personal data becomes a marketable asset. The manifesto's endurance stems from both its critique and revolutionary optimism, the belief that society can be transformed through collective action. In an age of climate crisis, pandemic, and authoritarianism, this vision offers an alternative to market fundamentalism. The question isn't whether Marx was right about everything, but whether his core insights about capitalism's contradictions still illuminate our world.